Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Good afternoon, live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. This is Valley Roundup. This week, we have a star in our midst. Are Aspen officials skirting public weigh-in on the new government building? Aspen athletes continue to earn new neckwear. And students in Aspen say they do not want guns in their classrooms. One columnist agrees. All that and more coming up on Valley Roundup. Joining me today to put all of this in context and give their insights are Madeline Osberger, contributing editor to the Aspen Daily News. Madeline, thanks so much for coming here today.
Great to be here.
Samuel Bernal, station manager of Radio Law Tricolor. Hi, Samuel.
Hi, thank you for the invitation.
And on the phone is John Colson, columnist with the Aspen Times. John, do we have you there?
You do, and thanks for calling me up about this.
Yes, wonderful. Thank you all for joining me. All right, well, I want to start with a big congratulations to Radio Law Tricolor, who won Station of the Year from the Colorado Broadcasters Association this year.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jen.
So you went, the award ceremony was over the weekend, and you were in attendance, but did you know that that was coming?
No, we never knew. We knew we were nominated for 6 awards, and they say, get a table because it's going to be a big night. But I didn't know it was going to be that big. You know, it was at the end of the ceremony, exactly at the end.
Okay.
After the big award, they have like a personality of the year or something.
Okay.
Someone who has been, you know, working for so long and is like the biggest honor.
Okay.
So we thought the ceremony was over. And then they were like, okay, and we have 4 very special awards, and we're like, wow, really? And then it was the registration of the year. We're like, wow, we were very, very surprised about that.
I mean, I'm getting goosebumps that you were sitting there and didn't know it was you. Like, did it take you a minute? Did you recognize the name?
When we heard like KPBW, like, wow, and I just started running to the stage. It was very bad because once we were on the stage, I didn't know I could say some words. So you know, then we left the stage, and the other 3
speech.
Winners could say a speech. We're like, I didn't say a speech.
Get him back up there. Put him back on the stage.
I know.
Well, I have one of your winning. You won Best Newscast as well. I have one of those, and I thought I would play it for our listeners really quick here.
Representantes de ICE confirman que como desde hace años van sobre objetivos específicos en el Valle. ¿Qué tal? Los saluda Samuel Bernal, y estas son las noticias. En una reunión con representantes del Department of Homeland Security, a donde pertenece la Policía de Inmigración, agentes compartieron a la Tricolor y otras organizaciones...
Que is this you talking?
Yes.
Holy cow, man.
But that is my radio voice.
What? You're 2 different newscasts were recognized as well as some community spots,
yes,
and public service announcements. What? Can you start with talking about the kind of news that you try to cover, or what were in these newscasts that you think caught the judges' attention?
Yeah, for the competition, they tell you what days you have to send the news. So it happened that news that you were playing and was one of the winners was about a meeting we had with ICE, the people from ICE here in the Valley, and I belong to this. This committee organization that it's was created by Catholic Charities with police departments from Aspen, and they invited the agents, the ICE agents, and so they share very valuable information about what we're really doing in the Valley, and we let people know what was happening, and it's very useful for our community because they are always afraid right now raids and all that. So yeah, that news was about that.
And then the public service campaigns that you did, what were those concentrating on?
Yeah, then was an award for the best public service announcement, and that was for a PSA about a doctor that was giving a free service in the Valley, which was also very valuable, you know, with the how expensive all the healthcare
right.
is here. It was very useful for the people to know that there was a doctor offering free consultations in the valley, and also it was a public service campaign. It was about the homeless, and it was by Cristal Mariscal, my coworker.
Okay.
And she was working in that, like trying to find the way how can we really help homeless people in the valley, and it happened that it's not giving them money directly, but giving them money through the organizations that are really experts in what they have to do with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's such a huge community asset and very well deserved.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you here
on Valley Roundup as one of our regular contributors. So thank
and
you so
congratulations
much.
Congratulations, too, because of the awards
you got. Oh, that's really nice. And, that's true. We won some
in public radio and some awards, too.
Let's move to one of the bigger national news pieces of the week, and we had a local component with the Aspen Middle School leading they didn't walk out of class, they did walk out of the school to Pepke Park, do a march against gun violence, for gun reform. And John, you've actually had a column about guns and regulation a couple times since the Florida shooting, specifically your most recent one. You have an opinion on if teachers should be armed.
I sure do. I don't think they should. and there are many reasons for that, but just in the news this week were two situations where teachers with guns in the classroom accidentally fired them. And, you know, thankfully nobody was hurt. But if you have somebody playing around with a gun in a classroom and it's loaded, the chances are that sooner or later, if it goes off, it's going to go off and hit somebody. And that's insane.
That's astonishing. Do you know those were teachers who have in places where it was already okay to be armed, or like since they've started instituting this in several schools, there's already been two mistakes?
Yes.
Wow.
But these were gun safety lessons that had predated the shooting in Florida. They'd been going on for a little while.
Okay.
And they were at the urging and interest of the teachers themselves, who convinced the school administration that it'd be a good idea to teach gun safety in the classroom. And while you could argue the merits of that one way or the other, my first question when I read this was, what in the heck was a teacher doing playing around with a loaded gun in a gun safety class?
Wow,
that's crazy. It's against all the rules of gun safety education. Even the NRA would say, well, that's kind of nuts.
Maybe learn without the bullets.
You're supposed to.
And what's you've talked to or heard from the Aspen School District about their opinion about arming teachers in the classroom?
Yes, I talked to somebody down here in the RE1 school district about their opinions about it, and they don't want it. They don't feel it's necessary. They feel that the better options would be to somehow stiffen the security at the school. And I think
with
the Aspen schools feel the same way.
Guards, do you know?
Pardon?
Do they want armed security guards? Like, they do want guns around, they just don't want the teachers to be the ones who have them, or just more presence?
All the local school districts have what they call school resource officers who come into the schools at varying lengths of time, and sometimes they're there all day, sometimes they only come in at certain periods, and they are there for a couple of reasons. One is to provide security. They are armed. And they're also there to increase the interaction between the police and students, so that students might better understand what makes a cop tick if they actually get to talk to one every now and then before they get out of high school.
Okay. Madeline, I want to know, you know, this is a very student-led movement since the Florida shootings, but I am curious about the parent perspective, a parent of a high schooler right now, both. Just as this discussion is happening, I imagine that it hits pretty close to home, and you think about, what about my own kid? What about my own school? But also, what are you going through when you see the students taking the lead on this?
Wow, I was just so touched. I worked on Wednesday, and I didn't get to take part or go watch it. But the photos that our photographer brought back, it was just like, wow.
There's a picture from Craig Turpin from the Aspen Daily News. The student is holding a sign: "My teacher doesn't need a gun. My government needs to change the gun laws."
Yeah, it's you know, their presence and their maturity is what is so astonishing and touching right now. You know, I know that the high school had good reasons they're going to do a walkout on the date of Columbine. Mm-hmm. So I was so glad to see that the middle school, you know, did this. And after school, too, when they could have been doing other things.
That's so true. It was skiing. Their free time.
Yeah. It's the early release day, so they could have been marching down Highlands, I suppose.
And John, you had in your column, you spoke a little bit about who actually does benefit if we do start arming teachers, there might actually just be like a business push for this, essentially.
Well, it would depend on the legal framework underpinning this whole thing. But one proposal, or I guess idea, has been that since the government would be enabling this, it would be the government who would buy the guns and pay for the training, and that would be a windfall for gun manufacturers. Mm. They asked there would be millions of guns sold, and for the training regime, there are a lot of people around who will train you in how to use a gun, and my guess would be that number would jump considerably.
Sure.
If every teacher in the land was informed that they had to take gun safety training and start to pack a gun in the schools, or even if it were only a small percentage, it would still be a couple of million guns because it'd be a couple of million teachers.
Wow. Samuel, are you hearing anything from your listeners? Is there a response that you can kind of summarize from the Latino community about gun regulation, gun violence, and guns in schools?
We have all points of view, like even in the Latino community, we have the, you know, the conservative opinion and the liberal opinions, and so I couldn't say there's just one voice in the Latino community, but they share exactly the same different kind of views about it. My daughter is at Ross Montessori,
okay,
and they had a silent walkout mm-hmm. that day for 17 minutes. It was beautiful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What kind of conversations? How old is she?
She's 11.
Wow. What kind of what questions does she have when she comes?
It's hard when the shooting happened in Florida. I didn't even want to mention because you try to keep them away from that, you know, and she's new in this country, and I was like, I don't want her to to be scared. But then eventually, in some way, in the school, they have it, and I try, you know, we try to be very objective, usually, about the situations, mm-hmm. so I don't want to go to any extreme, and I was talking to her about it, like, well, what do you think? And she was very, very smart when she said, you know, I think there will be some regulation about the age where people could really get a gun and the kind of gun. Like, yeah, exactly. Like, we don't want them to be forbidden, but we think it's smart to change some things.
Well, that makes my heart so big that you're having that conversation with your young daughter mm-hmm. and that the students all over the country are yes. saying whatever, feel empowered to have a voice.
You know, one thing, and I think John touched on it a little bit, is just where are they going to find the money for this? They can't even afford, you know, you have teachers who are kicking in $500 a year for school supplies and basics. Is this just, are we going to have a tax for this?
When we talk about that right now, I feel like I'm in a South Park episode. You know? this is not happening.
Yeah.
Well, but it's true. I mean, are we going to have to choose between buying guns for teachers and buying, say, books?
Yeah, in the classroom. Yeah. Right. It's not like our public schools are overflowing with cash. That's never been the line.
No.
John, another thing you said was, well, the argument is maybe the shooting wouldn't have happened if, you know, maybe shooters wouldn't go into a building if they knew they were heavily armed. But from what I've seen in my youth as this happens is that many times it's a suicide anyway or as well. So it seems like that wouldn't matter if that's kind of the intent or the mind frame that the shooter is ready to be in.
Well, it's a completely specious argument in so many ways. The idea that teachers being armed would prevent a shooter from going in and shooting up the school is, I think, so nuts that it just blows my mind that we're even contemplating it. I know, if you recall, at the Parkland shooting, there was an armed deputy on campus.
Right.
He didn't go into the building because he wasn't sure what was going on.
Right.
And to expect teachers to be able to react appropriately and effectively in an armed shooter situation is nuts. They haven't had any training in actually being in combat, and that's what that is. It's in combat. If somebody's shooting at you and you're going to try to shoot back, it requires a lot of training to get soldiers to do that. Mm. Teachers, forget about it.
I want to move on to a different one of our youngsters in the Valley, Alice McInnes. Madeline, can you talk about the accomplishment that she had this week?
Well, this has been a big week because we've got the Paras, the Paralympics, and then we have the World Cup Finals. And then I was reflecting back today in an article in the Daily News about 1 year ago today that we had this, the world came to Aspen. So it's all kind of, fresh in my mind.
Perfect.
Alice McInnes, though, my gosh, John, you probably know her from, she's lived in Glenwood and she's lived in Newcastle. Family's
yeah,
been
I
around
don't know
for a long
her
time.
Personally, but I know of her.
What a great family, she and her father. Yes, she won a bronze medal this week, and she has not. She was fifth in the Olympic last month, which was just fantastic. But Alice had a World Cup win in 2013, and then she had a terrible accident injury after that, and really is just coming back to form now this season. And here she is, age 28, which is about midlife cycle for a downhiller.
Right.
For a downhiller, you're still in your prime when you're 28.
Okay.
Yeah. So she's got some years. You know, Lindsey Vonn is 33 now, and she's kind of in the twilight. But Alice has some good years ahead of her, I believe. You know, a product of Aspen Valley Ski Club. She had skied other places, but she really caught fire when she worked with Casey Puckett up here. And he just found something in her, and here she is. So
well, let's talk about
wonderful.
That contrast from last year. She was in the World Cup finals, but
she was not in the World Cup. Well, she was as a forerunner, which is like, bummer, man. I mean, I'm glad to be here. And if you're 18 or 19 and up and coming, it's such an honor. But when you are at the prime and you don't make it, it's like, I got to grit my teeth here. And last year, she was not happy in that role. I remember speaking to her a little bit, and maybe it wasn't the best day for her.
And I did love your article kind of reflecting on the World Cup from last year, and that maybe what we've heard this whole time, that Lift 1A is going to keep us out of World Cup in the future, maybe that's not the full story.
Well, it will keep us out because the head of the FIS, she really... Sarah hates that lift and just hates the venue. I think she, 1 year, about 3 years ago, it was really messy with cables 4 years ago. And I think that was, and then SkiCo cleaned it up. But
so they didn't have a chance, like even though the lift line was never an issue, getting athletes up is actually pretty standard timing for any of these races. Even with that kind of proven, you don't think Aspen's back in the lineup for a while?
No, no way. Mm-mm. Killington has it locked up at least next year, and they're really in favor of FIS and US Ski Team because they've been getting 30,000 people over Thanksgiving weekend. You know, if we want to make another play, I think that Aspen maybe will have to retool and come up with another bid. That's just my feeling, but I don't think Thanksgiving is going to happen for a while, if at all.
Okay, and then quickly before we go to break, let's hear about some of our Paralympians who we had more, I think, local presence in the Paralympics than we did in the Olympics, even.
We did. And here's, we have had, let's see, we've had 4 athletes out of 10 have won medals.
Wow.
One was a double medalist. And then we have the coach, Kevin Jardine, who lives in Carbondale. And then we have others who, this weekend, Josh Elliott, who lives at Aspen Highlands Village. You'll see him all the time. Thomas Walsh. He's kind of famous because he took Michaela Schifrin to prom back when he was 17. And then Jamie Stanton, who was fourth the other day in the combine, which is really a bummer position to be in. Fourth
right
is great,
there,
but you're like, I'm so close. Sending those guys good vibes this weekend.
There's a couple more days left.
Well, there's slalom tomorrow for the men and women. Okay. Well, it's actually tonight. You know, it's that 16-hour difference.
Right. You are listening to Valley Roundup live from Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Joining me here in the studio to put the week's news in perspective for us today are Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News, Samuel Bernal, station manager of Radio La Tricolor, and John Colson, a columnist with the Aspen Times. We'll be right back. John, I want to come right back to talking about the Aspen City Hall or kind of civic offices project, if that's a better name for it. It's something that's been discussed and kind of in the public view for quite some time, but you had an article about it this week. What do you have to say?
Well, my conclusion after thinking about it and writing about it was that the city should step aside and just let the voters have a say about it. It has been the issue of a new city hall has been put before the voters before, I can't remember exactly when, but and they approved the idea of rehabilitating the old Armory Hall, which is where City Hall is now, and moving city offices somewhere else. But they didn't really approve this site.
Right.
And they didn't approve at all this project. This is all new stuff.
So if this was going to go to
the city has its reasons for not wanting a public vote on it. Number one being, I think they're afraid they'll lose.
Okay.
And have to start all over again, which would be a problem for them. But if that's the way the citizens feel about it, I think that's just the way it goes. And I spoke with City Attorney Jim True about it, and he believes that there is one serious flaw in this whole issue, and that is if the petitioners win the right to go ahead and have the vote, and the city loses, then True and others, I guess, in City Hall are worried that any decision the city council makes will be open to referendum.
I see.
And endless fighting. I don't think that's necessarily true, but that's just a gut reaction on my part.
Well, why not? It's endless fodder for all of us journalists if that happens. So,
well, yeah, that's definitely true.
So right now they're really moving pretty fast on this $22 million, 37,000 square foot building to house new offices. It's instead of, like you said, having some city offices in the Armory as well as renting throughout the community. And there was a report in the Times this week, $500,000 in rent and a homeowner association dues last year for the departments that are renting. So is there a fiscal argument? Is that what this is about?
I don't think that's specifically what it's about. I think that is one aspect of the city's own armament in trying to get this done. I think the main thing is that they just want to increase efficiency in the operation of governmental functions. The idea being if they're all in one building or close to in one building, then they can be better than if they're scattered hither and yon around town. But I don't think that that argument would hold much sway with the voters. I think they look at City Hall with its annual $100 million plus budget and think, efficiency? that's not even an issue.
You know, I think, John, also that the idea everybody in one building, now so many people telecommute, I just don't think, and then you have Pitkin County satellite offices down in Basalt, which seem to be working just fine. You know, I would agree with you. I think that argument doesn't hold water.
Yeah. So they have their, well, I think it's fear-based, and they have some technical arguments that they're working through the courts now.
Whether it can even be on the ballot, right? That's kind of what's being determined in the
right.
courts.
I'm the curious, right to referendum. They still maintain that this is an administrative act and not a legislative act.
Right.
I'm not sure that's going to fly either.
If this were to go on the ballot, what would you want to see that link? What would that question ask?
Well, it would ask, I think it would be basically a repeat of the ballot question of about 5 years ago when they said, do you want us to move City Hall out of the old Armory building, rehab it as some sort of community use center, and put City Hall somewhere else? And they had, my memory's a little foggy on this, but I think they had several different options in terms of sites to move the offices to. And I think that would be a valid question.
So when it was asked,
any sort of price estimates to help voters decide, that would be good to have in there.
How about also if we ask the voters, is it okay to exceed the height limits within the zoning because we're a city project?
Definitely.
So certainly that's some of the detractions is that it seems like they aren't having to comply with the same rules that other developers are complying with. But, you know, that question, like you said, was asked, should the Armory be used for community use? Essentially was the question. It was a non-binding vote, but it passed. No, so like the implied part, and I think this is the people who are still resistant to City Hall were upset how implied this was. But like if this passes and you say yes to the Armory, you're also saying yes to a new City Hall. And that's kind of how they got around it. But you know what? They're not using the Armory for public use, and they have no plans to.
No, if they would have to completely rehabilitate the building. I've been in the foundation of that building, and they had to shore it up in a serious way. God, what was that, a couple of decades ago? Because it was starting to look like the building might just start become a leaning tower of pizza and fall over.
All right, it's too close to dinner time to be talking about pizza. We're going to move on. Madeline, quickly, I want to hear about some reporting you did actually a couple weeks ago, and I couldn't grab you yet for that, but I'm really interested in this Racquet Club parcel that's being eyed for maybe affordable housing, which is interesting being that it's coming from some kind of a private suggestion.
I have to say, Allison, of the stories I've written in the last few months, this has been created a lot of animosity and anger among friends of mine who will no longer speak to me anymore. I did a lot of reporting on this behind the
scenes.
Yes, thank you, John. I figured, Colson, if anyone can appreciate you, can. I don't have any friends anymore, but oh well. You know, and John, also because we lived in the same neighborhood for so many years, you know mm-hmm. this neighborhood well. This is one of the largest parcels undeveloped within the city of Aspen, if not the largest.
Of a spot for a developer.
Yes.
And it's next to where there is affordable rentals being developed. There are
Project, yeah. Okay. It's like across the street from Centennial, and then the big open, and then it abuts the
So right now people are parking
club.
There,
yeah.
And so they can park there for free all day and take the bus and to ski. That's
or,
people
or walk
know
up
that
Smuggler.
Parking lot.
Or yeah, walk up. Yeah, either one. You know, the parking lot, we lose 5 spaces. A big deal. I think it's the other thing is, you know, what is going to happen. And I think the members of this club, there's only 126 members. Some of them, I think, maybe we deserve the best price because we've held on to this for so long. And there's this thing working behind the scenes. Oh, well, other people want us to use it for, you know, public space and employee housing, the smaller project, why should we take less money for the sale of that? That's one thing that has emerged. It's a $15.5 million
wow.
offer,
okay.
from what I understand, from Sunrise.
And that would be the most they could get because that was a private developer?
Well, I think, I don't know. And, you know, it could get in a bidding war. And right. what people have criticized me for is like, well, we've been working behind the scenes and, you know, working on these deals. And it's like, well, you know, I'm kind of in transparency. That's right. sort of what we do here. I know you guys are smart working behind the scenes, but why don't we all join in this conversation? And I think it should be a community conversation.
Does it sound like it's up for sale no matter what, and who it goes to and what it is turned into is the debate at this point?
I think it hasn't been publicly marketed yet. Okay. There are things going on behind the scenes
yeah.
with some members and a membership committee that would like to see, because they would like to see a nice little clubhouse there and maybe some indoor courts and stuff. And certainly the members cannot finance that with what they pay. They're very, very low dues.
I see. Okay. Before we all take off, I want to hear opinions about the new bus booze ban, if I can say that on the radio 3 times fast. Let's hear the take. Samuel, did this story come up on the radio for you this week, or do you know if there's any reactions to, so you can no longer open your beer can while you're taking the bus down Valley is the rule anywhere.
I feel very proud about our community in that side, because I used to have a friend who is a RAFTA driver, okay. and I would be like, hey, how do we behave with him? And he was like, you know, the immigrant community is one of my favorites because they are the most respectful when, you know, when they are on the bus. But, and then he will tell me stories about some other people. They were like, yeah, and it was hard, especially when there are these party times.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of people will agree about mm-hmm. that.
Mm-hmm. In support of the ban. John, what do you think?
Well, I think if they're going to go so far as to ban booze on the bus, they should also put a breathalyzer at the front door and ban drunks, because, you know, the last bus of the night is known as the Vomit Comet. And it's just, yeah. I've ridden on it, and it's awful if you've got at least 2 or 3 loud drunks. They make it uncomfortable. If there are more than that, it can turn into a violent scene. And it's just, if they're going to do it, they may as well do it all the way.
So there was this reasoning that there's more and more alcohol-related disturbances. And in my read, that doesn't mean it's because you got drunk on the bus. I totally agree with you that, you know, there's no rule that you can't be drunk on the bus. It's just that now you can't drink. As of June, you can't drink on the bus. But for me, the one time I know I'm going to take the bus is if I've been drinking. I mean, for me, that's such a public service, and that is so worth it to keep people off the street who are drinking, you know? And we want, what's the alternative? So to me, let's put the drunks on the bus. That's the best place for them to be.
Mm-hmm. Except if you're the driver. You know, the drivers, if when you talk to them, because I ride the bus frequently, and they have a lot of, they see this escalating anger too, and they said, and they're seeing more homeless, like sleeping in Ruby Park. Now I think there's a limit, an hour limit or something, okay, when people have to leave. It's unfortunate it's gotten to this point. I know the drivers feel a little bit under siege though right now. Right.
Oh, yeah, it's a war zone sometimes. Yeah.
Man, I wish we had more time, but that's it. You've been listening to Valley Roundup live on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Allison Bechtesh. Thanks to Madeline Osberger, contributing editor from the Aspen Daily News, Samuel Bernal, station manager of Radio Law Tricolor, and John Coulson, columnist with the Aspen Times. Thank you all for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News. Thanks for listening.
Use entitlements since 1953 with a goal of building sustainable and economically vital communities in the Roaring Fork Valley. Learn more at balcomgreen.com. This is Aspen Public Radio, broadcasting on KAJX Aspen and KCJX Carbondale. Thank you.